It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Stuart Vonnie.
I'm Harris Faulkner.
I'm Brian Kilmeade, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, March 11th, 2024. I'm Mike Emanuel. A big moment in American politics is expected tomorrow when special counsel Robert Hur is going to testify on Capitol Hill about his investigation into President Biden's handling of classified documents.
The idea that he's not capable of being held accountable for violating the law and holding and classified documents when he had absolutely no right to do so, but he's capable of running the country.
And Lisa Brady. Blockbuster weight loss drugs are helping people to eat less, but they don't address eating too much of the wrong things to begin with.
And you have an insatiable hunger that's like a runaway freight train. Enter Big Pharma to capitalize on it. But who's creating the problem? Big Food.
And I'm Joe Concha. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Special counsel Robert Hur is expected to testify Tuesday about his findings in his investigation into President Biden's retention of classified documents as a private citizen. Florida Republican Congressman Byron Donald says the president should have been charged with wrongdoing.
Having a poor memory does not absolve you from violating the Espionage Act. Being old and elderly does not absolve you from violating the Espionage Act.
There's also the fallout following President Biden's State of the Union address, which critics say was highly partisan. The president went after House Republicans for not taking up a bipartisan border bill, which passed the Senate.
In November, my team began serious negotiation with a bipartisan group of senators. The result was a bipartisan bill with the toughest set of border security reforms we've ever seen. Oh, you don't think so? Oh, you don't like that bill, huh? That conservatives got together and said it was a good bill?
Alabama Republican Senator Katie Britt says the president needs to look at his own responsibility for the border crisis.
Minutes after coming into office, he stopped all deportations. He halted construction of the border wall. And he said, I am going to give amnesty to millions. Those types of things act as a magnet to have more and more people here.
The president and former President Trump held dueling rallies in battleground Georgia over the weekend. Mr. Trump blasted Biden border policies for the death of a Georgia nursing student allegedly murdered by an illegal migrant.
Lakin Riley would be alive today if Joe Biden had not willfully and maliciously eviscerated the borders of the United States and set loose thousands and thousands of dangerous criminals.
House Republicans were successful in impeaching Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. Now a select number of those GOP members are preparing for a potential trial in the Senate.
We really have to focus on the decisions that were made to essentially erase both the northern and southern borders.
Wyoming Republican Congresswoman Harriet Hageman would be an impeachment manager.
That's what this impeachment is focusing on, is the fact that he has violated federal law. There are two primary statutes that I think you've got to look at. And one of them states that you cannot do a mass parole into our country. The parole statute allows them to parole particular individuals on a case-by-case basis. For example, let's say that there is a family that comes over from Mexico, and the child gets sick and they need to go to the hospital. What they would allow them to do is they would parole mom and dad with the child to go to the hospital. But that doesn't mean that you parole another million people into the country simply because one child needs medical care. Mm-hmm. But that is exactly what they've been doing. They have been paroling entire categories of people, say everyone from Venezuela gets paroled into the country, not on a case-by-case basis. So I would focus on the statutory provisions. Another very important statutory provision states that if you are going to come here and seek asylum, we shall, we must, we are required to hold you in some kind of custody until your asylum claim is resolved. And so that's another area that I would go into. I would cross-examine or question their decision to not hold people in custody.
What would you say to critics who claim this impeachment effort is a partisan attempt to remove a cabinet member?
I think that I've just laid out why that's absolutely not true. One of the challenges that we've had with this administration is I would describe it almost as a form of anarchy. Our government is based on the idea that there is a that we will adhere to the rule of law. So if there's a speed limit of 75, we drive 75. If there's a stop sign, we stop. If you don't do those things, you are considered to have broken the law. And there can be and should be consequences for that. Yet with this administration, we have the people at the very top that are breaking the law. And an example is Joe Biden, who, despite what the Supreme Court has said with student loans, has continued to attempt to forgive student loans, even though he has absolutely no legal authority or right to do so whatsoever. And I would say the same with Mayorkas. This is not partisan. It doesn't matter to me what administration is in place. If we start allowing or start turning a blind eye to or start ignoring or start excusing the idea that the people at the very top are not subject to the rule of law, we've lost our country. We've created a two-tier justice system. And so I often say that usually anarchy comes from the bottom. It's people who are attempting to overthrow the government. The bizarre part of what we're living through right now is the anarchy is coming from the top. It's coming from Joe Biden. It's coming from Mayorkas. It's coming from these folks who are literally not just ignoring the law. They are blatantly violating the law and saying, so what are you going to do about it?
What steps do you want to see taken to help the crisis at the border? And why do you think your party so heavily opposed the Senate border bill negotiated by Senator Lankford?
So a couple of things. We have to finish the wall. We have got to finish the wall. What I've been down there and I've been to two locations where the wall was left unfinished. Mm-hmm. But they built roads so that they could finish the wall. And what you see is just massive numbers of humanity coming through in those particular areas. So that's one of the things that we have to do. We also have to do the Remain in Mexico policy. There's just no question that we cannot incentivize people to come to this country by saying, if you come here illegally 10 years down the road, you may very well get thrown out. But in the meantime, you're going to have children here. You're going to have grandchildren here. You're going to embed yourselves in the community. And then you're going to have the Democrats scream and jump up and down and run their clothing, pull their hair and say, wait, we can't be deporting these people. They've been here for 10 years. So we've just got to fundamentally change the way that we are dealing with this. As far as the Senate bill, that is not a border security bill. That is an amnesty bill. H.R. 2 is a border security bill, and it gives us the tools and gives our Border Patrol the tools that they need to actually secure our border. The Senate bill was, I wouldn't describe it as a joke. I would describe it as downright dangerous. It would allow between 5,000 and 8,500 people a day to cross into this country illegally before there would be any kind of restrictions imposed. Well, the people aren't stupid. The cartels can figure that one out. They can start figuring out how to send people across so that they send 5 to 8,500 people a day. In addition to which, it would allow the president to declare an emergency and say 8,500 people isn't enough. We need more. Let's let 10,000 in. We've got a surge on the border. We've got a caravan that has shown up. We need to let 20,000 in today. Number two, and then another thing is that restriction only lasted until 2025. And then it was again, Katie Barr the door, as many as they could possibly shove across that line, that barrier, the non-existent barrier, I guess you'd say, they would be able to do. That the money that they were requesting, and I think it was $15 billion or $20 billion, it was to process people more quickly. It was not a border security bill, and people need to understand that it was an amnesty bill. I don't know how long Lankford got taken for a ride, but he did. And it was a bad bill that none of us can support.
Special Counsel Robert Hur will testify this week in a public hearing on his findings in the case of President Biden's mishandling of classified documents. You sit on the Judiciary Committee. What will you be looking to find out from the special counsel?
Well, I think that we're all very, very interested in his personal observations of the president. It's rather a strange time that we're living in when we are told that we cannot believe our lying eyes. You watch President Biden. We know that he is not capable of actually managing and overseeing this country and acting as president. Heard just confirmed that. He had the personal ability to do that, and he confirmed it. And for me, I want to talk to him about why in the world wouldn't you charge him? The idea that he's not capable of being held accountable for violating the law and holding and classified documents when he had absolutely no right to do so, but he's capable of running the country. I think what we saw the other night in the State of the Union address is someone who they had obviously given him medication so that he could stand up there and yell at us. But all he was doing was reading a teleprompter. And any time that he went off script, you could see that he was nothing but a befuddled old man. So I kind of want to watch how this develops and watch and engage with Mr. Herr on what his observations were.
You touched on the President's State of the Union address in what critics are calling a hyper-partisan speech. What'd you make of the address?
I thought that it was horrific. To have the president stand up there and as partisan as he was, just sit there for an hour and scream at everybody. It was a very bizarre thing to observe.
Congress avoided a partial government shutdown this week, but there's another funding deadline looming 2 weeks from now when basically legislation for defense, state and homeland security departments will have to be passed. What's your sense of how far apart the parties are on those negotiations, and do you think a deal gets done?
You know, one of the things that I've been so frustrated about in coming here is that I believe that the American people know that this is a situation that can be solved and resolved, but we have political leaders that don't allow that to happen. We're heading towards $35 trillion in debt. Mm-hmm. We're heading to the situation where our interest payments exceed what we spend on defense. We have agencies that have gone rogue, such as the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, and others that are blatantly violating people's constitutional rights, such as the First Amendment. In fact, when Mayorkas came before our committee, that's what I focused on, is the manner in which the Department of Homeland Security is violating citizens' First Amendment rights. And yet the Congress fails time and time and time and time again to use the power of the purse to rein in these agencies and to force them to adopt policies that are in the best interest of the American public. So I voted against the monstrosity that was passed last week because mm-hmm. it isn't a budget bill. I voted against the monstrosity last week, and I will vote against the one this week as well, because we're not being serious about actually cutting spending and actually cutting out programs that are not just bad ideas, but at this point are incredibly destructive to our republic. So I will continue to vote against these bills so long as we refuse to use the power of the purse to go in and take out programs that should not be funded. And that we continue to refuse to hold the administration responsible for the bad decisions that they're making.
Congresswoman Harriet Hageman of the great state of Wyoming, thanks for your time. Have a great week.
Thanks, Mike.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
I'm Benjamin Hall, Fox News correspondent and New York Times bestselling author. Join me for my brand new podcast, Searching for Heroes. Make sure you subscribe to this series wherever you download podcasts and leave a rating and review.
This is Joe Concha with your Fox News commentary, coming up.
Millions of Americans are seeking help from what's become a multi-billion dollar industry, the blockbuster anti-obesity drugs that began as treatments for type 2 diabetes, including Ozempic. Wegovy, a high-dose version of Ozempic, was the first approved by the FDA for weight loss in 2021, followed by Zepbound, a new version of Mounjaro, last year. And some users are clear-eyed about their goals and how it works.
The main reason to use it was to cut back on some of those appetite impulses and eating impulses so that I could, build better habits.
These drugs do help with hunger by imitating hormones that would normally help regulate appetite after you eat, satiety hormones. Both versions target a hormone known as GLP-1. The drug in Zepbound and Mounjaro also targets a second hormone. And all of this got even more attention lately when Oprah Winfrey announced she was leaving the Weight Watchers board to eliminate any perceived conflict of interest, the company said, after disclosing she was using a weight loss medication. Though even Weight Watchers now has plans that include medication. Actor and longtime fitness advocate Mark Wahlberg tells Fox News Digital he doesn't knock anyone for doing what they feel is best for them.
Listen, to each his own. I just suggest that people, especially I'm trying to encourage young people, prevention is better than cure. So we want to continue to encourage people to live a healthy lifestyle.
In a recent Pew Research Center survey, nearly three quarters of Americans had heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and similar drugs. But more than one third think they'll do not much or nothing at all to reduce obesity in America. And there is concern about losing sight of the bigger picture on health and wellness.
Beyond the potential side effects that these drugs can hold, the fact that they are not in any way a permanent solution.
Celebrity fitness trainer Jillian Michaels is a certified nutrition and wellness consultant, best-selling author, and businesswoman.
And they are not only essentially denying the underlying factors of why the American population is becoming more and more obese, I find it to be very alarming.
There's been such a boom in drugs like Ozempic for weight loss that analysts at Goldman Sachs are actually projecting it'll boost overall economic growth. But part of the reason for that being is fewer people miss fewer days of work, and the costs of poor health care, the costs of poor health are reduced. Is this something that's sustainable?
So if we were to look at these drugs in detail, right? And what I've done now is instead of getting into this scary warning label on the back of the cigarette box, I like to paint you the most optimal scenario. So let's say you're one of the 50% that has zero side effects. You lose a good amount of weight. Fantastic. As a result of the weight loss, other biomarkers will improve, not because of the drug, but because of the weight loss, which is also fantastic. Now, what all of the studies done on these drugs have shown us is that somewhere around 68 to 72 weeks, you will plateau. So at some point, right, you have to find a way to not be as hungry. And we can get into why people are so hungry, because that's what these drugs do. They impact appetite on the gut-brain axis and essentially curb your hunger. So you eat less. By eating less, you lose weight. And that's how these drugs facilitate weight loss, right? So at some point, when they stop working, you got to figure this one out on your own. Now, here's the thing. If you get off of it, all of the meta-analysis show us that the vast majority of individuals put all of the weight back on and then some, two-thirds in the first year alone. With these drugs, you never get off of them. They do stop working. And we simply do not know what this looks like in 10 years, 20 years, we don't know. And the way the drug companies are responding to this plateau is by creating what's called a double agonist or King Kong triple agonist. So essentially, these drugs mimic satiety hormones, right? And there are many different satiety hormones. GLP-1 is just one. So what other pathways can these drugs act on, right? It's like, ah, damn it. We've plateaued on this one, or it didn't work for that person. Well, this one works on two satiety hormones. Hold on. This one works on three satiety. So we just keep pushing the up button. At some point, there is a brick wall that you're going to slam into. And I wonder what happens then. And then the most important part of this conversation that we're not discussing is that you can just eat less. And just move more, and you will get better results.
How do people do that? Why are we so hungry? How do we change it?
So first, let's look at the physiological component, right? our bodies are supposed to regulate your hunger, right? The idea is, oh, okay, you know what? You've eaten enough here. You're good. There are a bunch of different mechanisms in the body that are supposed to take over and tell you, stop eating. So the question becomes, well, why is that not happening? Okay. Well, what's going to trigger these satiety hormones like GLP-1 or cholecystic kinin or leptin? What's doing it? Well, sleep. Okay, great. That's one way. Hydration. Fantastic. That's another. But protein, fat, and fiber are what are going to have the biggest impact on releasing satiety hormones.
But if we're not putting in good things, everything goes in the wrong direction. Michaels uses soda as an example, probably about 250 calories of processed sugar, no protein, fat, or fiber, which means no release of those helpful satiety hormones. Just the opposite.
You release a ton of insulin. Your pancreas goes, oh my gosh, there's so much sugar in the blood. Dump insulin. This is dangerous. And you become hypoglycemic. These foods are also designed to smash the dopamine center of our brain, like nicotine, cocaine. They're highly addictive. So they not only do not release satiety hormones, they make you hungrier, and they're psychologically addicting. That's the second part of this conversation. Why are we psychologically hungrier than ever? We're socializing less and less. Everybody's existing behind a screen. I mean, we're more stressed than ever, and we're seeking coping mechanisms. Hence the reason people turn to things like alcohol, sex, nicotine, all of these different drugs, right, that are releasing dopamine. We want to drip dopamine. We don't want to dump dopamine. These foods dump dopamine, and we become addicted physically, psychologically, for all those different reasons. And you have an insatiable hunger that's like a runaway freight train. Enter Big Pharma to capitalize on it. But who's creating the problem? Big food.
Well, we have an obesity crisis, right? So obviously trying to tackle that is a very tall task, especially when you have celebrities like Oprah admitting, oh, by the way, I'm using a weight loss drug as well, it turns out. Does that make it harder to try to convince people to, you know, that that's not the easy way out and think about the actual, you know, alternatives to changing your eating habits and your lifestyle? How do we do that?
You know, if this was an easy way out, I want to be very clear. I would capitalize on it professionally. I would take it personally. And most of the weight loss industries are selling these drugs. If you look at apps like Noom or, you know, companies like Weight Watchers, they're in the business. I would get in the business. I have a massive fitness app. Very easy to do. And guess what you need with these drugs? You need exercise because you lose muscle at an alarming rate. So if it was an easy way out, I promise you I would take it. And I say this because it isn't about judging people for being lazy, being weak. No, it's because I think it's the exact opposite of that based on the data. So it is concerning because there are certain individuals that are obviously very influential. Now, with that said, Oprah might love this drug. She's not a health expert. She doesn't claim to be. She's not an MD. She's not a PhD. And she's not somebody like me who talks to MDs and PhDs all day long because that's my business. More discouraging is not the celebrities, because it's not their responsibility. They're not out there saying, I'm a health expert. I'm a doctor. I'm a scientist. Take this drug. It's the medical community itself. That's really where I'm feeling let down. And not by everyone, but by many. And I think it's because of the way our medical system is set up, and healthcare is an industry. Obesity is a massive industry with a compound annual growth rate of over 9% a year. And as you mentioned, these weight loss drugs are arguably the best-selling drugs in the history of pharmaceuticals. It is a huge, huge business.
One other thing, and it is kind of a broad question, but if someone is struggling to make a change in health and fitness for themselves, what is the best way to get started?
The first thing we need to tackle is the simple science of weight loss, weight maintenance, and weight gain. And it is irrefutably, without question, calories in versus calories out. I'm not talking necessarily about the optimal diet, right? There's a diet that's now become quite famous called the Twinkie diet, done by a professor of nutrition. And he illustrated that by simply eating less crap, you lose weight and you improve all your biomarkers. Shocker, just like Ozempic. Is it ideal? Of course it's not. But it's, you know, one Twinkie is better than two Twinkies. And the reason is because it's less calories in. Once you get through that part of it, you need to look at the psychological components of why you are driven to eat. Is it loneliness? Is it anxiety? Is it comfort? Is it a coping mechanism? You know, for certain people who dad bod, you know, I got kind of apathetic. I got stressed. I got overwhelmed. I got bills to pay. I got depressed. You know, can you improve those things via results and exercise and community and culture? One would hope. Usually, yes.
Jillian Michaels, celebrity fitness trainer, New York Times bestseller. Thank you so much for spending some time with us.
It's absolutely my pleasure. I really appreciate being on.
Here's a look at the week ahead.
Monday, President Biden will release his proposed budget for the upcoming fiscal year starting in October. It faces an uphill battle in both the House and the Senate, where legislation funding for the current year has yet to be passed. Tuesday, the special counsel investigating President Biden's handling of classified documents is expected to testify before the House Judiciary Committee. Robert Hur ultimately decided against pressing charges, saying in his findings he found the president had trouble with his aging memory, including recalling dates and details. Wednesday, free agents in the NFL can officially be signed, taking one step closer to the beginning of the football season. Notable names include quarterbacks Kirk Cousins and Russell Wilson. Friday, Swifties can get another taste of the Eras Tour. The Taylor's version of her concert film premieres on Disney Plus with added songs, including Cardigan and an acoustic version of Maroon. And that's a look at your week ahead. I'm Anna Eliopoulos, Fox News.
I'm Emily Campagno, host of the Fox True Crime Podcast. Far too often, women's lives are cut short as they fall victim to unthinkable crimes. But each week this month, I'll be joined by women who fought back, survived, and took back control. You won't want to miss this month's stories of survival, strength, and resilience. Listen and download on Apple, Spotify, and FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Joe Concha.
What's on your mind?
President Biden's State of the Union address was several things: divisive, loud, scrappy, and unhinged. All of this came with a portrayal of America close to utopia in terms of its economy, a top issue heading into this election, as it always is. Our economy is the envy of the world, the president declared. Our inflation is the lowest in the world, he also said. Fact check, at 3.1% inflation last month, that claim around our inflation being the lowest in the world ain't even close to truthful, as in dozens of countries have a lower inflation rate than ours, per multiple fact checks. Context, by the way, inflation was at 1.3% when Donald Trump left office. It's 2.5 times higher than that now. But besides that, meanwhile, the economy is not the envy of American voters. A recent Financial Times poll shows that 14% of voters, 14, mind you, believe they are better off under Biden. Even Democrats are sour, with less than one quarter, 24%, saying life is better under this president. And when zeroing in on which president can handle the economy better, the former one in Trump tops Biden by a 20-point margin. That's according to a recent NBC poll. Many pundits also talked about a possible pivot the president would make on immigration during the address, likely watched by more than 20 million people across multiple networks. But the pivot never came, with Biden instead pointing the finger of a catastrophe he created at the U.S. southern border at, ding, 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 Republicans. Actually, the president can fix the border right now. He doesn't need Congress. All it takes is reversing some of the 91 executive orders and actions he took just days after office, reversing critical Trump orders and policy that has led to the unsustainable flow of migrants coming across the border right now, more than 7 million. Here's some context. 35 U.S. states don't have a total population of 7 million. Biden could have ordered resumption of wall construction and reinstated remain in Mexico policy. He did neither. Instead, pointing to a toothless immigration bill that does not resume wall construction or remain in Mexico as somehow being the solution. But perhaps the most notable moment of the 1 hour, 8 minute address was Biden being shamed into saying the name of Laken Riley, the 22-year-old nursing student brutally murdered on the campus of the University of Georgia while out for a jog by an illegal migrant. Lincoln Riley is who Mr. Biden referred to Laken Riley as. Called her an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. Then he talked about consoling the parents and saying how he also lost a son, so he knows how they feel. I'm pretty sure the president doesn't. He should have picked up a phone and called those parents days ago. In the end, this State of the Union address will be forgotten quickly. They all are, after all. When was the last time you watched the State of the Union? And 3 days later, you can remember one thing that was said. So while this was a speech that was great for the MSNBC crowd, the CNN crowd, the New York Times and Washington Post crowd, as far as reaching those independents in key states like Georgia, Arizona, Nevada, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, it didn't reach those folks, and those are the folks who decide elections. I'm Joe Concha.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.